Welcome to Paradigm Shifters, everyone. I have a wonderful paradigm shifter today, someone that you're going to be probably led through a wonderful, what would you call it, a passageway into more consciousness of self by the experiences that she's sharing. Welcome to the show, Grace Avalon.
Well, thank you very much, Veronica, and thank you for having me.
Now you call yourself an intuitive counselor, a coach, but I love the name of your book. Not only is she an intuitive counselor and a coach, but she has been journeying through intelligence, through consciousness, and through who she is. And her book, of at least part of that journey, is called Thank God I'm Crazy: My Journey to Sanity. So I'm so excited to talk to you. And one more thing, Grace. Isn't Avalon that mysterious island part of the
Oh,
Arthurian legends?
it's so funny you asked me about that because, yes, it is. It is my pen name. And actually, there's kind of a little story behind it. I won't go into it now, but it was kind of given to me. But I actually live in a home where I can look out my kitchen window and see the island of Avalon.
You're kidding. Oh my
No.
gosh.
And that happened after I chose my pen name.
Oh, you know what's so interesting about that is the more of consciousness we get into, as you well know, the more synchronistic our lives are, right? So I do love that. That's a great sharing. And I also love the name Avalon because of the mysterious island part. And, you know, when we move out of the collective way of thinking, we are moving to a mysterious kind of reflection of self. So let's talk about how you, it says here, you left your body to be swept away into a kaleidoscope of light and prophetic vision of places you'd never seen before. So let's talk about what triggered it, what happened.
Well, yes, we have to really go there in order to see my window, if you will. It all started with an experience
I
I
call it a nervous breakthrough.
well, breakthrough, yes. It was
Okay, so you go
what
ahead.
happened though is it was an experience I had when I was 22, and it really changed my entire perspective of life. I At the time, I had been raised in a home with severe physical and emotional abuse, and then, not knowing better, of course, I married into an abusive relationship. And one morning around 4 a.m., I was crying on the sofa when suddenly it was as though I left my body, and I was sucked up into a vortex of this exquisite kaleidoscopic light, and I just traveled and floated in this light. And as I did, I saw images of places that I'd never seen, like, for example, a curved driveway that was lined with evergreen trees and a mountain with the multi-lane highway below it, kind of innocuous places. And I was in absolute euphoria, and I laughed and I laughed. And because I had seen visions, my husband thought I was crazy, and he put me in a mental hospital.
Oh no, really?
And I walked out after 9 days, and I just looked around at the world, and I decided, you know what, it's the world that's crazy. The world, as we know, is a circus of greed and betrayal and fear and war. And that, I realized, is the insanity. The sanity is the love that I came to know in that beautiful kaleidoscopic light. So, Veronica, I was inspired to write this book for others and to call it Thank God I'm Crazy in order to share my prophetic experiences, which taught me that when we can see the insanity of our lives, then it opens the door for us to see the sanity of the love that we really are.
How long did it take you to process all this? It doesn't take just a minute, does it?
Oh my gosh, no. No, it actually came over a period of several decades, more than several decades, because there's a little more to the story. To my astonishment, over several decades, all those places in my visions actually happened in my life. And I've actually included,
Aha.
and I've included pictures of those places in my book. There are 13 of them. And for example, the first prophetic vision came when I was in a really dark place. I had learned that my former husband was having an affair with my best friend. So as I drove up
Charming.
her driveway, I suddenly realized this was the vision I'd had in the kaleidoscopic light. You know, the curved road with the evergreen trees with the sun shining through them, just as I'd seen in my vision. You know, it wasn't deja vu, it was I remembered the vision. So instead of, and this was a defining moment, instead of completely collapsing into severe depression, a beautiful calm came over me, and I realized right then that there was a power within me, but it was not of me. And somehow it was guiding me. So each time, as my visions continue to happen over decades, they activated this voice within me. And I made the choice to trust this voice and trust myself so that the first part of my book, I tell about the story of my being guided to freedom from my abusive husband at the time. And the second part tells how I found a peaceful way of life that I did not even know existed by facing my own
Wow.
hidden fears and through radical forgiveness. And I know that this power of this inner voice is in everyone. And then there was another stage that started to come about.
Can I interrupt you before we leave this first vision stage?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's something I wanted to ask you about that, is when you drove up that driveway and recognized that it was one of your first visions, did you feel more at peace with your husband having an affair? Like maybe this was your exit, this is your gateway out, or what did you feel? Or did you go through the normal machinations we go through?
That's a good question. And the answer is yes with yes. I felt more at
okay.
peace, but I also had to go through the normal. It was kind of a process of melding the world that I had seen and the world that I thought I was living in. So yes, I reacted,
uh-huh.
you know, in some typical ways, but at the same time, there was definitely a shift inside of me. And I felt that this calm, this power within me was guiding me. I didn't know what it was. I'd been raised Southern Baptist. My father was a layman Southern Baptist minister. And, you know, I had kind of abandoned all of that because it was so radical as I grew up and he was so abusive. And so I didn't know what this was. But what I knew was that I could trust it. And yes, I really, there was a calm that really was the guide in my life at that point. But I also was getting, you know, as all of these visions manifested over the years, I was beginning to see my life as a dream and that I'm awakening sort of one, I called these visions symbols. I began to call them symbols as they appeared. And I began to feel a transformation within me. And as my life started to feel like a dream, it was like a dream that I had, and now I was remembering it again. For example, as I mentioned, there was a mountain in my visions. Well, later,
yes.
later, it's so funny because, I mean, that I was in West Virginia when I was put in the mental hospital. And when I left my abusive husband, I returned home to California and moved to a lovely little condo that I by myself in Dana Point. Well, it turned out that I was living under that mountain, at the foot of that mountain. And I didn't realize it for many years until I was coming back from San Diego and I saw the vision, the aspect of the mountain that I had seen in my vision. And I knew, you know, that it was that vision I had seen. So later, I actually went up on that mountain, and I realized, here I am, standing in my own vision in 1994 that I had seen in 1960.
Wow.
But I knew
wow.
at the same time, yeah, I knew that even though life was a dream, that I'm not a dream, that I'm real, and that I'm learning in this dream. It's teaching me.
Did you feel more peaceful with each step of the visioning, or were some of them very traumatic? It's kind of interesting. It's like walking a cakewalk in a way, isn't it?
That's a good question. Yes, some were very traumatic. And yes, I did. With each time, especially, you know, after two or three times when these visions continued to manifest, I really just surrendered. I surrendered to what this was. And it was as if my subconscious knew. And so everything that I needed to remember and my fears started coming up. But I had such a deep trust at this point that I just went with it. And I let this inner voice, what I call so in my book, and the point of my whole learning, I believe, is to listen to that inner voice. And I let that inner voice guide me until I was just, I had let go of so many fears I did not know that I was holding. And I learned how to forgive, because I realized that if I didn't forgive, I'm a victim. And to let my fears run my life, I'm also a victim. You know,
it's quite a challenge to go that deeply inside, is it not?
Oh, gosh, yes. And of course, we're talking about a number of years, but what it gave me was courage to be brave,
good.
To just go for it, go for the whole thing, not slide by. And I cannot tell you how grateful I am that I did that. There were so many things that I went through and let go of.
How did you get involved with radical forgiveness?
With radical forgiveness? Well, that was part of it. Knowing, for example, one of the things that came up, I actually was led to do hypnosis, and I remembered a horrendous abuse that my father committed on when I was 18 months old. And I won't go into it, but you can read about it in the book. And so I was in misery. I was in hate. I was living in such savage thinking that I realized...
I don't blame you.
Yeah. And I realized I was finally, you know, it takes time. All of these things take time. And I realized that, well, of course, they don't take time, but they don't have to take time, but because we are in this human body, they do. And so I realized that I had to let go. I had to forgive, and that ultimately there's really no choice other than to forgive if I want to be happy. There's no power in being victim, and to not forgive is being a victim. And there's an old Indian adage that I learned about that says it's like drinking poison. To not forgive is like drinking poison and expecting the other person to die.
That's actually really good, isn't it? Yeah.
Oh,
wow.
So I'm
this
the miserable
is quite a
one.
Story.
You know, that other person.
Well, so tell me this. What about your family? Did anybody in your family support you, or did you have to become a real castaway or the scapegoat healer, that archetype that often happens?
Well, you know what? That's a good question. And the truth is, I didn't tell anybody. And that was the hard part. Yeah. I kept it secret for so many years because I thought people would think I was crazy. So I was alone on this journey. And it was as if I had two faces. I kept this other side of my life secret. And then I stumbled across a book. Maybe you've heard of it, called A Course in Miracles. Pardon me?
I said, of course. Yes.
You've heard of it. Okay.
And I have it as well. So. Yeah.
Oh, well, I see. Wonderful. Well, as you know, it's a modern-day philosophy that's based on universal spiritual themes that teaches us how to train our minds to let go of fear and to see only love. And it refers to life as being, hello, a dream or an insane illusion. And it says that we're real and that everything in the dream is a symbol. Well, you can imagine how I felt when I read that. I mean, it took me 7 months. I would take that book to the beach and read it whenever I could find a time to crawl away and be alone and cry and just cry and cry. Because, A Course in Miracles emphasizes, as I was so gratefully discovering, that it's our journey to awaken from the dream that's all that matters. And so I'm not, I'm daily looking at the insanity that the world is and then the beauty that is inside of me. But not only me, I'm not alone. We're all one. And so when I cannot isolate myself from others, and when I see others, whatever's troubling me about them or trying to get along, I always try to stop and to look inside and to remember that that person is not only one with me, I am one with that person, and that we're here learning, and this is our journey to discover who we really are. And I'll just say that A Course in Miracles has really been a valuable guide for me, and I've had the joy of teaching it for 9 years. And
Wonderful.
it was just, and I, I still do the lessons daily because they reinforce. And there are many ways to God, A Course in Miracles says, and but this reinforces the vision or the veil, what was shown to me when the veil was dropped. And there's so many people that have had similar and even more dramatic experiences. They come back and bring the truth. And what I love about it is the truth is the truth, and it doesn't seem to change. It's all about love. It's all about loving ourselves and loving each other. And I will just mention Marianne Williamson has she's an, as many know, an international speaker on the principles of A Course in Miracles, and she has endorsed Thank God I'm Crazy. And as you probably know, she's a current candidate for the president of the United States.
And she has been such a bold and strong speaker about some of the things that make people think we're crazy, right?
Isn't that
And
true?
she
Oh, that's
says it
so
in
true.
such a way. And she's so pretty. I haven't seen her in person. Is she small? Because she's so pretty. And I go, wow, she's just really kind of the peak of that feminine symbol, to
Isn't
be
she?
pretty and
Yeah.
smart and fierce. And my guides always say, and love is fierce as well. So I think of her there. Do you know what I mean by that? Or at least I don't know what they meant by that, but I like it very much.
That love is, what
That
did you
love
say?
it. Fierce.
That love is fierce?
Fierce.
Oh, thank you.
Strong.
Fierce. Okay, of course. I
Very
thought you said fierce.
strong. Very.
Yes, oh, that's so true. And she talks about how we are so ready for a moral and a spiritual awakening. The
Oh
darkness has
boy.
come in spades, and now that we have cyberspace, we're seeing it from every angle. And the dark, but this is not a bad thing. The darkness has to come up before we can, the light can heal, before we can reach out and
And
offer
I've never
light.
seen so many people say we have to be better to one another. We have to, because it's so difficult that we're all recognizing it has to happen, that we're better to each other, we're kind, we're uplifting, right?
Yeah. Yes, and that's so true, Veronica. And I think that's why this is not necessary. We don't. We should look at the good that's coming out of this. It's bringing us to be more knowledgeable, more awake, more aware, less self-centered, and more wanting and to help. To reach out. And to do what we can, and to be grateful for the country that we live in, and the
And to
laws
be
that.
truthful about who and what we are and how we feel at any given time, too, I think, hey?
Absolutely, absolutely, and it's okay to do that. It's okay to
So
do
it's kind of the turning point time, I believe.
that. I love it. I love that term. Yes, because
It
our.
just depends how wide that turning point is.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
How long
How
has this
I
been
want to
in the
talk
road?
about how how long did it take you to become an intuitive? For example, I think people might like to hear how did the intuitive aspect or your counseling work and that sort of thing emerge in the middle of this craziness, if you will.
Well, it took a long time because there were times when I just didn't even know what was happening to me. But the foundation was my trust, that I learned to trust. And counseling just comes natural for anyone, really. If you first see that one who comes in complete perfection and wholeness, look at them in that way. And that's what I've learned, that's what all the symbols and the journey have taught me, is that we are complete and whole and innocent beings of God. It's just that we have to peel away the blocks to our knowing that. So gradually, when I see that person in perfection and wholeness, then the blocks begin to show themselves as to what it is that's keeping them from their own joy. And so then, I suggest, I don't do the work, they do the work. I just mirror, and I suggest that they look at that. And to realize that, as the Course in Miracles says, that God's will for his son is perfect happiness. That's who we really are and what we're intended to be. And psychotherapy is to restore the ability to make one's own decisions and to be willing to reverse our thinking and forgive at the same time. And wellness. Wellness is to begin to separate truth from illusion and become increasingly willing to accept illusions as false and to accept the truth of our existence as perfection. This is really a journey from the head to the heart. And I think
Are
you
you
knew.
also a psychotherapist?
I'm not officially a psychotherapist. So I have psychological psychology in my background and in my training. I studied it in college, and I also studied something called psychosynthesis, which is
Oh.
the sort of the melding of the body, mind, and spirit, and recognizing that we really are not bodies, we are spirits. But as I like to say, everyone has the power of choice, and everyone has the power of their own inner voice. And as a counselor, I support both men and women, first of all, know their own goodness, and then to trust that they have a voice within that will guide them to their highest good. But first, we must take our power by be willing to listen, and then second, we want to empower ourselves by taking action, and then third, we have to trust. We have to trust that everyone deserves to be respected and to live peacefully. Just as as nature's destined that tiny little acorn to become a magnificent oak tree, we all have an innate blueprint for happiness because our true nature is the sanity of love.
Aha, that's where sanity comes back in, doesn't it? And all the things that stop us from loving are doubt and fear and what, experience that didn't work out very well and abuse.
Well,
I
and
went.
yet, we actually, each experience that we have is what I call an assignment. There really isn't, everybody that we meet is our assignment. And we,
I love that. That's great.
with the family that we're in, the job that we're in, the race that we are, the country we live in, how our body looks and how it functions. All of those are our assignments. And all the while, we're constantly finding people that we need to grow with. And I'm sure relationships trigger psychic wounds.
Oh,
We, and
yes, I sort of noticed that.
you notice that? Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
And I, it's sort of like I remember the kaleidoscopic light, and it's like we're all diamonds, but we diamonds in the rough, and we're sanding each other's rough edges through our relationships. There just are no accidents who we meet, And whatever stirs emotion or anger in us is all about a lesson that we're learning that will bring us closer to inner peace. And once again, I'll say, and if we want true peace, our forgiveness has to be unconditional. We can't hold back. We have to see that person whole and complete. And then just let it go. It's just part of the dream. And know that we...
I think there's another thing, too, is that people have to be able to find in themselves, and you already kind of mentioned this, that quality in the other person that is giving you abrasiveness or roughness or anger, right? We have to find that in ourselves, don't we?
My, that is so true. So true, Veronica. It's like we mirror each other to show each other, you know?
Yeah.
And some of the people that bother us the most are our greatest lessons.
Well, and also so many people are frustrated by empathy, and sometimes I am as well. But when we talk about oneness, I think somewhere managing all of that and that feeling that we understand how someone else feels, even when they're being horrible, and is as we turn that around, the oneness becomes more possible, doesn't it?
It
you know,
does.
In our consciousness.
Yes, that's beautifully said. But, you know, it's the pride of the ego mind, the false belief that we're separate, that keeps us from forgiving. Or, you know, it's about preserving my image or my reputation, or I want to be right, that stops us from forgiving. And mostly it's when we don't realize we're coming from a position of being a victim and that we're in our little self and the mortal world belief system of the ego. And the ego has everything upside down. It would have us deny our own power. So yeah. When we pick up what I think of as the wand of our own power and recognize that we are the only ones making ourselves victims, and that forgiveness can raise us to a higher consciousness, then forgiveness becomes the process of accessing our own power and our own joy. As you probably know, A Course in Miracles says, would you rather be right or would you rather be happy?
I think we know the answer to that. I want to get back to radical forgiveness. I'll bet you a lot of people listening to this aren't really familiar with that term, but I find it an excellent term. So
yeah.
Can you share it with us? Mm-hmm.
Well, radical forgiveness means that we have no conditions. We don't say, okay, I'll forgive you this time, or I'll forgive you because I've been there and I've done that. Because what we're doing is we're making this dream real. We're making the insanity. This is the logic of the ego. We're making insanity real. So, for example, the car that cuts us off, you know, we always use that for some reason as an example. I think it's because it takes us out of our higher self when somebody threatens us, you know, and run and drives in front of us with really fast. And
yeah, you use the right word. It threatens us at some level.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. We feel threatened. It takes us right into fear. And, you know, so then we breathe. And I used to practice this early on. You said, how did I learn to do these things? I can remember I had to drive 25 minutes to and from work in Southern California traffic.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, boy. I had lots of time for practice. You know, every time something would happen that would just like, what are they doing? And then I would have to say to myself, now breathe, now let go. It's all part of the dream. It's just people doing what they do. Don't judge, because judgment makes me tired. The Course in Miracles says who we are is incapable of being tired, but judgment makes it so. So I would
say,
that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let it go. So I practiced and letting it go and realizing through my study with the Course in Miracles and through the visions that I had seen that what I'm doing is just making the dream real, and I'm holding on to something that other person has no clue about, and I'm making myself miserable. And I learned that, you know, we train ourselves, and of course that's what Course in Miracles does. It's a mind training. It trains us to practice and practice and practice until it becomes a natural response for us to forgive completely, not conditionally. And that's what I call radical forgiveness. And when we do that, you know, we can just go on with our life, and we can enjoy our life, and we don't have to worry about the. We know that life is. If we say life's a dream, we know we've got bills to pay, and we've got, you know, all kinds of responsibilities, but we can still go on through life. The only difference is that we go on through life with radical forgiveness, and it makes us happier. And we can enjoy life. We can enjoy having sex. We can enjoy having whatever comes into our life, cars, whatever, places, people, going to movies, you know, any kind of material gain, as long as that is not our ultimate goal. That just, God's will for us is that we are in happiness, but it comes when we first learn to let go and to radically forgive, not just others, but to forgive the dream and to realize that we are not a body, we are a spirit, and that we are in co-creation with God. We are in the likeness and God. I love the definition of prayer. Prayer is the medium of miracles, and daily, of course, the miracle says prayer is the song that the Father sings to the Son, and the Son sings back to the Father. And it's just sort of an ongoing consciousness, if you will.
So jumping back, I love that, actually. Thank you for that. Jumping back into forgiveness, radical forgiveness, I've heard stories of people, for example, that actually I did some interviews of people who have taught that for a long time. And one of them was about working with a woman who had been raped more than once. And he worked with her until she got into forgiving herself for the rape, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
And it was really almost scary powerful, because it's like how do we feel when we go in and accept that we were responsible at some level for that kind of thing? You know, she did a beautiful job, but it was quite something.
Oh, Veronica, you're reminding me of a part that I have in my book that is in my past, thank God. But when I did learn of this horrendous abuse by my father when I was 18 months old, I all of a sudden didn't know who I was. I had no idea.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's like, what? What? All my life? This is, who is this person? And I felt dirty. I felt different. I felt separate. I felt all kinds of things. Sorry for myself, abused, angry, furious. All of these things, and the abuser carries guilt, and it's passed on. The whole act is passed on to you. So I had, at this point, this was well on into my trust, and many of my visions had manifested, and I knew that this had come up for healing. But even though I knew it had come up for healing, I went back into, like your earlier question, that this small person that I am, you know, at that point I felt I was. And why? Mm-hmm. How could you? You know, you're supposed to be my father. You're supposed to take care of me. And so I actually went to a group called Voices, V-O-I-C-E.
Okay. Go ahead.
Have you heard
I like
of
this.
Yeah.
I haven't, but I'll look into it. Is it for people who need to speak about that sort of thing?
Right. Voices, victims of incest emerge. Let's see, VO, victims of incest emerge. I guess that's it. Survivors, that's the S. But I like to say victoriously. And I went for 10 weeks, and here I was, an adult with a lot of teenagers who I learned so much. It was as if I captured my own teenage time being with them, and I came out of it healed.
Wow.
But it took
Is
time.
your dad, was your dad still living at the time?
He was not, and I have to. I've often asked myself, actually, I know what I would do if he were. I think I would have. Well, I go back and forth. I think I would have taken him to court, but yet that is judgment. I mean, the only reason I would have done it would have been for others to see. An example for others who are in that same situation, just as the Me Too
Well,
movement is coming out
yeah,
now.
because I wonder, the question that comes up for me is sometimes when 35 or 40 years later someone brings it up and does the court thing, I haven't talked to enough people to find out if that actually heals that incredibly locked in, because that locked in pain keeps us from ourselves, doesn't it?
You're absolutely right. It does. It does. But I wouldn't have done it for that reason because I really did find a beautiful, beautiful moment, which I write about in my book, which I was able to join with my father, who was deceased, and to know that we were one and that we were both playing roles. That I believe in lifetime. I actually, part of what the symbolic images showed me, brought me to realize was many, many lives that I have lived, and that we all play a part. It's like Shakespeare says, "The world is a stage," and
I love
this
that.
is my part this time, and that was his part. And I
Well, jumping
came.
back into radical forgiveness, it makes it a little bit, not easier, but the forgiveness becomes a universal thing instead of just you and your dad in that one life, right? There's
Oh,
a whole
exactly
vein of
right.
things.
Exactly right. And again, it's as I said earlier, who we know and our family are assignments. And I truly accept that and know that he and I, it was more or less a bargain from our higher self that I was pushed to a dimension of awareness I never would have gone to without this. And you say, oh, thank I. You look back and you say, well, I just, one night when I was sitting in the car at Dana Point Harbor, it just came to me in such a beautiful moment that my father and I were one, and that he is no longer the being, the body that he was, and that even if he were. And I did forgive him at some level before he died, but I didn't realize the dimension of the abuse at that time. But it was a beautiful, peaceful moment to realize that we're all one and we serve each other with the parts that we are playing in this stage or this dream or this classroom, however you want to look at it.
It's drama. So when we're talking about everything is love, that makes it. When you're doing forgiveness or radical forgiveness, do you not enter a place of love, mutual love, self-love through forgiveness?
Are you saying, do you not enter?
Yeah, do you do you I
Oh,
think it
yes.
turns us into a much more loving person because
Oh,
the
yes.
conditions we place on love. So when you're talking about your dad, I'm going, I bet you really loved him by the end of it all. Did you?
Oh, thank you, Veronica. That is exactly how I felt. And that is what happened that moment, that evening in Dana Point. I literally could forgive and love him. And I later on did the same process with my first husband.
Oh,
And
good.
yeah. And
And he's not still living, is he? Mm-mm.
he is not, no. But it becomes a habit, as you know. A Course in Miracles teaches us we do this over and over and over till we finally, it's kind of like, how many times do you have to do this before you realize where it's going to go if you don't go the right way? So you choose once again. Choose again. Choose
It's
again.
a way of life, isn't it?
It is exactly. It is a way of life. And we can enjoy life. The only difference is that we're constantly forgiving. We're letting go and forgiving. And that makes us happier. We're not we're not hanging on to and being burdened by resentment and the things that the ego would have us be burdened by, so that we turn our heads and don't see the light. We don't see the goodness in ourselves as well as others.
Well, here's a cheeky question for you, Grace. But we're, since we're headed to Avalon, I think I can ask a cheeky question. Will you, have you gotten to all of your symbols yet, all your beautiful visions yet, or do you have a whole stream of them, like an escalator or something, moving ahead of you?
Oh, gosh, that's a wonderful question. My belief is that I have, the mountain was the last symbol. And I intuitively knew that for many years before it happened. I just didn't know. And the mountain, here's a really way out thought that I do introduce.
I love way out thoughts.
Okay. Well, it is about paradigm shifting, right?
You betcha.
When I went up on that mountain that I mentioned, I told you about my journey, I stood there and I realized, first of all, let me back up. I was in the hospital a few six or 8 months prior to going up there with a very serious surgery. And as I was driving home, or I wasn't, someone was driving me home, I was on some narcotics. And I noticed that as I turned my head to the left and saw what was on that side of the road, and then I turned it to the right, I'm still in my mind, which has been slowed down, I'm still seeing, I'm not quite seeing what's on my right yet because the image of what's on the left is still in my mind. So as we continued on that drive, we went past my mountain. I call it my mountain. And I said, oh my gosh, I've got it. I have got it. So when I went up on that mountain, I stood there and I said, we are in the echo. There, the voice of God, the Bible says, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And so I saw, the vibration, the Big Bang, the moment of creation, whatever one wants to call it, that moment occurred, and we were created, and that here we are. That moment is, let's just say, God's voice is on one mountain and I'm on my mountain. And it's, the sound is coming towards me, but it's not here yet because I'm waiting. It's an echo. There's an echo, and I'm in the midst of the echo. You know, just like we look at stars at night, and they're so beautiful, and yet scientists tell us they're already burned out. So
that's so interesting.
Time,
because
is
there
illusion.
Is no time and space as well. Yeah, that's right. I find that fascinating. I always understand, oh, yes, it's an illusion. And then I'll sit by myself and go, what exactly does that mean some days? You know, you just get into these other spaces. And it does keep me laughing, just like you just did. It's like, yep. You know, it's a mystery. We're headed for Avalon, you know.
That is right. The Avalon is in the mist. The mist is clearing, and we can begin to see Avalon. Yeah, that's so true. And you know, what the Course in Miracles says, and what I had discovered even prior to meeting that document, was that I am letting go of wanting to come back in a body. Because, that's when time ends. Time is only time. We have to be in a body to be in time. And you know, Einstein said that life is an illusion, albeit a persistent one.
So talk more about that. I mean, you don't want to be coming back in a body. And people are always talking about what they want with that. I'd love to hear your perspective, or the Course in Miracles perspective, or both of them. You know.
It's literally when we just get tired, when we finally see the absurdness and the insidious insanity of this world, this ego creation, shall we say, not the spirits within it, but the illusion, the dream, the drama, the play that we're in.
The interpretations of words like success. Interpretations of words like success.
Exactly. But we know that, like the child who wants something for Christmas and begs all year for that and then gets it at Christmas time, and then 2 weeks later it doesn't even want to, it might play with the box that it's packed in, or it doesn't want to open because it just doesn't satisfy us. And when we finally get that, in fact, let me use a beautiful analogy that Dr. Kenneth Wapnick used. I had the great privilege and pleasure of knowing him. He was one of the scribes, or he put Course in Miracles into its current form. And I used to
Oh.
listen to him, yes, listen to his lectures. And he said, look, it's like this. We're the projectors. We're projecting this movie. Everything out there is coming from our own mind, and we project the image and the concept of time. So let's just pretend we're up in the theater and we're back where the projector is, because you can't change anything on the screen. You have to go to the projector to change it. The screen is just a reflection of who we, of whatever's going on. So our mind, our one mind, is the projector. All right, so we're sitting there, and he says, you put your feet up, and on the right is a wall full of, he used to say videos, now he's, he, and then he starts saying DVDs that are that are lined up, and on the right side is all of the DVDs that we know are goodness, they're love, they're really wonderful, loving things. And on the left is the is the D are the DVDs of all those things that we know we shouldn't be doing, or that we know hurts, or whatever. So we pull down the videos on the right, or the DVDs, in order to, because we know we're supposed to. We know what's good. Hopefully we've been taught, what is good. And then we get bored. And so then we pull down, we go, let's see what's going on over here. So we pull down a couple from the other side. And then we go, ouch, that didn't feel very good. And so we go back to the other side. Well, we keep on doing that and watching those videos until we get it. And then we just get up, and then we just go out the door. And someone, when I was listening to this beautiful talk that he was giving, said, so what do we do when we're out the door? And he says, well, we just go out in the lobby and eat popcorn with Jesus.
Oh, isn't that? I love that.
That
And
great?
what's his last name again? Kenneth.
Kenneth Wapnick, Wapnick,
Oh, I might look
and
him
he has
up.
wonderful, wonderful. You can get all kinds of books and tapes and videos that he's made. And I don't know if he made any podcasts. I think he made his transition prior to that actually happening.
Well,
But
let's jump ahead to you and talk about if you choose to live outside, and this is what you're saying, not to return as a human being, to live outside of time and space. Is that what you're saying? And can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, yes, the answer is yes. That is what I'm saying. In other words, I can come back in another lifetime. I can do it as long as I want to. And nobody's going to
Okay.
make me not do it. But if you come to a place where you feel the joy, when you come to that place, where you feel the joy in you and the love in each other and the unworthiness of our attention and the foolishness of the dream, although that doesn't mean we aren't supposed to be happy and laugh and have joy. We make it a happy dream while we're here. That's what the Course calls it, a happy dream. We can do that, and that is our journey from our head to our heart, is to learn how to look out through our lens, our eyes, our mind, and see everything as love. And that doesn't mean to not see what's really going on. That doesn't mean, that you have a 50 IQ. You see it, and you choose again. It's called positive denial, and you. What I know is that Course in Miracles and all major spiritual beliefs talk of that time, that heaven, that nirvana, that time, that blissful, the rapture, whatever, we all are anticipating, and we know in our hearts that we're not at home here, that we are aliens here, and that our soul, our the Course doesn't use the soul in, because that means separate, that our being, our beingness is what would want its wholeness. And so when we're ready, and the Course says when we are ready, we choose not to come back into another life, and then God takes the next step. Now, what that is, according to the Course and many spiritual beliefs, is beauty and bliss that is beyond our imagination, and I liken it to what I saw in that kaleidoscopic light. I mean, that was my experience. That's why I'm such a strong, firm, I have such a conviction and knowing. It's more than a conviction. It's just a simple, quiet knowing that there's such beauty in all of us, and that it's only the beginning of what we know, that in this body, in this ego dream, we are incapable of recognizing and understanding how great and beautiful life itself actually is, as we learn to let go of it.
Now, tell me one more thing. I love that. That's very beautiful, and it's very inspiring. But tell me one more thing, which is back when you were saying, well, we're taught what is good, and we're taught these things. And I go, how much of our knowing what's good is innate? I don't know whether it's from like lifetime after lifetime, or whether we as a species have a directional, attitudinal, soulular thingamabob that says it's innate to go forward in such and such a way.
Well, it's been said, and scientists say, that there's only two things that babies are afraid of, and that is falling and loud noises. But love, we never have to learn. Babies love naturally. Mm-hmm. It's the fear and the hate that they are taught. If they were not taught differently, they would love. However, when we're put into bodies, when we have created, you know, Course in Miracles says this all started by, in all of eternity, where all is one, and it says all is one right now, the Son of God, being that one mind in all of us, had one tiny mad idea, and that was that we thought we could be separate from God. Well, I see that as the moment when we were given life, and it's like, okay, we're a little kid. Now what the heck do I do with it? You know, we're trying to figure out what we do with it.
Right.
A toy, you know, you throw it, you bite it, you stomp on it. What do I do with this now?
Yeah, kids are pretty good at that, yeah.
Yeah, and the Course then says, but we forgot to remember to laugh. We took the idea seriously. And so,
Poor us, but we're learning.
Well, right. you know, Veronica, how laughter is. When I owe every class that I ever taught for 9 years, I always started with a joke. I would get them off the internet because I'm not great at telling jokes. But it was like we closed the door. We prayed, I told a joke, and then we would go into, everybody would laugh. That's my point. Everyone laughs, and it's a harmony. And it's like we shed off in that moment all the stuff we brought into the room, all of our concerns, and it brings us to the moment, to our innocence, and to our connectedness.
Oh, I love that. And I have to sign off with you right now, which, of course, I don't want to, because we could go on and on. And you're so inspiring. And I know people are picking up speed in their own self-love, because that's one of the crucial parts, isn't it, is self-love. You know?
Oh,
tell
absolutely.
People how to give them the name of your book again, and also how to connect with you if you're giving workshops or if you're doing media episodes or things, you know?
Oh, wonderful. Thank you. Yes, the name of my book is Thank God I'm Crazy, and it is available on Amazon and also in ebook, and soon, hopefully, in the next 6 months, to be in Audible. And I am doing workshops and I was just recently on television in Portland on ABC doing a brief interview regarding my book, and I'm and then San Francisco as well on CBS, and I hope to be doing a couple more of those kinds of interviews. And I would love to speak to women specifically who, you know, there's a various areas of interest that I hold that, and that I would like to share with other people, people in the Me Too, you know, approaching the thoughts and the goals of the Me Too movement. I'd like to see that expanded to include domestic abuse. Because what I've written about in my book is just a tip of an enormous iceberg. And I'd like, domestic violence occurs in homes of every class. And
very surprising sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's true. White collar, blue collar, middle class, upper class. And both emotional and physical abuse are in silent killers of the spirit and the body. And,
Yeah, it's really something. Well, I have to sign you off. Grace Avalon, you are an absolute delight, but you're someone, when I speak to you, is a beginning state of unfoldment, and that's your influence on people. Oh. And this is Veronica Entwistle, and you've been listening to Paradigm Shifters, and oh boy, I hope you feel shifted from your old paradigm and into the new one, which is available to us all. So again, this is Veronica Entwistle, and with Grace Avalon, and you can receive my podcasts on veronicaentwistle.com, hear us on BBS Radio Archives, and iTunes and Stitcher, and I hope to hear back from you all. Thank you for listening.